When you get the Planet Fitness Black Card, you can bring a friend anytime you work out. And now through March 13th, get your first month free when you join. You heard that right. Conquer the stair climber with your partner in climb. Enjoy a post-workout recovery session in the hydro massage. And do it all again with access to any of our 2,700 convenient locations. So, you coming? Get your first month free and all the perks with the PF Black Card for just $1 down, $24.99 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends March 13th. See club for details.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, March 7th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about Bong Joon-ho's latest film, Mickey 17, and we'll present an interview with the director and two of the film's stars. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at SlashFilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi.
All right, BJ, let's get into some general thoughts about this movie. What did you make of Mickey 17?
Oh, I love this movie. Oh my God, do I love this movie. It's impossible for me to like talk about how much I love this movie without it sounding like I'm overhyping this movie. But this just really hit me in a way that I needed it to. I think a lot more than I was anticipating. I love Robert Pattinson getting to be a weird little guy. I love subtle as a sledgehammer political messaging. I just absolutely love this movie.
Okay, so this is the point in the podcast where I will give what my wife referred to as my big sigh. So... I wanted to love this movie, BJ. I really did. A new Bong Joon-ho movie is a big deal, and I was really excited to see this. And from what I've seen in terms of reactions, it seems like this movie is really divisive. And I think mm-hmm. you and I are on opposite sides of that dividing line. So let's just get into spoilers, actually, so we can talk about things in detail. I think there's just so many like specifics that I have to bring up. I kind of have like a three-pronged approach to why this movie didn't really work for me. So the first part of that is that the comedy didn't really work. I laughed like 3 or 4 times, but when you're not vibing with a movie's humor, then it just feels like you're sitting through jokes that don't work for you, and it just makes the whole experience feel much longer than it would otherwise. So mm-hmm. was that a difference that you found? Did you find this movie to be really funny or the comedy to be successful throughout?
Oh yeah, I was having a hootin' and a hollering. I wouldn't say that this falls exactly under an umbrella that I tend to live my life by, but I do think that it's at least tangentially related. But the humor of Mickey 17, for me at least, falls under this category I like to call, I'm sorry your life isn't sad enough to find this funny. But that is very much why I vibe so much with this movie, because the humor just, it's a very particular flavor that I think really resonates with people who've had really bad lives. And okay. This is a conversation I'll probably be repeating in therapy, and I'm fine by that. But yeah, the humor really, really worked for me.
There's one character that I think best represents the way that the humor did work for me in this movie, which is the sort of lead scientist, the male lead scientist figure who mm-hmm. Is like really sucking up to Mark Ruffalo's character. And at one point he like almost teary-eyed tells him that he's tendering his resignation immediately because some thing went wrong with some experimental drug that he was giving to Mickey 17. And just that guy's delivery and a lot of the lines that were written for that character, that really tickled my funny bone. But yeah, for the most part, I just didn't really vibe with the comedy. So that's a problem for me. I think my second prong, I guess, is that I thought some of the characterizations of the characters were like really inconsistent or abandoned in ways that I found to be frustrating. So the Nasha character, who is played by Naomi Ackie, she seems to have this really solid relationship with Mickey, and she even goes into a a gas chamber with him as he's being experimented on, which is this really sweet moment. But as soon as there are two Mickeys, which is kind of the thrust of this story, she turns into this pretty selfish person who doesn't seem to care that Mickey 17 isn't really into this whole thruple situation that has emerged here. And I know that people are complicated and aren't always one thing, but just in terms of tracking the arc of that character, I mean, maybe you could say she's on drugs at that moment, mm-hmm. because Steven Yeun's character is like revealed to be this low-level drug dealer who is supplying folks on this spacecraft with I forget what exactly the dose or the brand of drug is, but some sort of drug. And so she's on drugs in that moment. But even that doesn't really feel like it kind of hammered home the idea of like this being a larger piece of commentary that Bong Joon-ho would make, you know, like the we all have to rely on drugs to make it through this capitalist hellhole type of thing. It just didn't really feel like that was extra clear to me. And then the movie just kind of wants us to be back on Nasha's side after she's treated Mickey in this questionable way. It just kind of felt really haphazard to me. So I don't know if anything that I've just said there resonated with you at all, because you like this movie a lot more than I do. But did you pick up on any of that, or did it just not bother you as much?
Yeah, so I see, like, obviously, like, this read is very much a thing. But the way that I was interpreting it is, you know, kind of twofold. Is like, one, yes, the drugs are absolutely going to do something. But also, these are people who have been sort of trapped on this ship for a very long period of time, doing a lot of work that is like very dehumanizing. They don't have a lot of like creature comforts or simple pleasures. And so suddenly she's getting, you know, two of this man that she loves very much. Like, that's going to kind of like break your brain a little bit. It's like you have a shiny new toy. You're like, there's not really like a way for a person to process that. Like, you're, it's gonna be a lot. And then we end up back on Nasha's side, because the second that other people learn about both of the Mickeys, like, that does sort of start this revolution. It starts like a huge change. And in that moment, she does have to decide, okay, well, where, like, what part am I going to play in this? And like, who am I going to fight for? What am I going to fight for? Like, I can't be like screwing around. Like, there are like real consequences to this. Like, playtime is over. And so that's sort of how I followed her throughout this. But like, when the two Mickeys are first there and yeah, she's on drugs, I do genuinely think this is like the first instance where anybody that isn't a member of like, you know, the government is able to fulfill any sense of like hedonism, which is something that they've been denied for many, many years.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because they, just her and Mickey 17 got into it pretty hot and heavy before Mickey 18 came along. So it seems like that was a thing that was satisfied. That was a need that was being satisfied. You know, even though Mark Ruffalo's character and Toni Collette's character were like talking about like banning sexual activity until they could get to this planet, and then just trying to like, I guess, put their own stamp on the rules and like control the way that people use their bodies and all that kind of stuff, which is like part of the commentary that Bong Joon-ho is talking about here. But yeah, that moment just kind of stood out to me. So in terms of like other characterizations, like Steven Yeun's character, his name is Timo. He begins the movie with Mickey, and we flash back to find out how they ended up in this icy cave. And I really enjoyed seeing their backstory and learning about their pretty messed up relationship that they
have.
Yeah,
I love that he sucks always. Like, he's never not sucked, which I think is great. But I also think that, like, it's a really good example of sort of, like, these codependent friendships that a lot of people find themselves into, or, like, it's impossible to not get political with this movie. But, like, the amount of people that I know who are still friends with, like, people that they've known since childhood who have always been kind of shitty to them and have shitty politics. And they're like, yeah, but I've known him since we were 12. Like, that's my guy. And it's like, your guy sucks, man. Like, cut him loose.
Yeah, so I enjoyed, like, seeing that relationship and examining how messed up that is. And, like, the whole thing with the failed macaron shop and like getting in debt to this gangster.
So funny.
Yeah, I enjoyed that stuff and thought that was pretty funny and pretty well done. Joining up on this space mission as a way to like escape the planet, I liked all of that. It just kind of feels like the movie is going to be a two-hander between Robert Pattinson and Steven Yeun for a little while, and then Steven Yeun's character disappears for a big chunk of the movie, and when he comes back, it's in this smaller capacity as like this kind of petty drug dealer. And I just felt like there was more potential to that relationship that we didn't really get to see. So that was one where I felt like it was kind of, I guess, like raised and then kind of abandoned in a way that I found it to be pretty frustrating. And then the Kai character is the other one, who's played by Anna Maria Vartolome. I'm not exactly sure how you pronounce her last name. I was not familiar with this actress, but I thought she did a great job. It seems like she's going to be a significant part of the story because she's presented as like this romantic rival almost to Nasha. She's clearly interested in Mickey. He's in this relationship with Nasha. And then when two Mickeys show up, she sort of nurses Mickey 17 back to health and acknowledges his humanity, only to then, like, basically in the next scene, try to negotiate with Nasha about which version she gets to have, like talking about Mickey in this way that does not acknowledge his humanity. So I found that to be like a weird about face.
Because I don't think she ever was like acknowledging his humanity. I think she always had kind of like selfish interest with him because she's grieving because her partner is dead and he was kind of responsible for it. And so I never at any moment was like, oh, she's genuinely interested in him. I was like, oh, no, she's depressed. She is heartbroken. And this is the last person who was also there when her partner died. Like, this is going to sound very complicated, but like, because she ends up with a woman at the end, I was like, oh, this is just messy lesbian breakup stuff. I see you. Okay.
Yeah, there was a moment like early on before the partner dies where she sits down and tries to talk to him at the like the cafeteria table or something. And Nasha like comes in and basically is like marking her territory and making it very clear that they're in a relationship. So that was the moment where I thought like she expressed some interest in him beforehand. And then like in that scene where she kind of nurses him back to health and they're sitting on the bed together and the camera does this really slow zoom in on them. She kind of like puts her hand on his cheek and like talks about how he is actually like a human being and feels things. And like, she seems like she's really vibing with him in like a genuine way in that moment. But maybe I just misread that scene and maybe she is just like looking to get laid basically. And that's it. And that's all she cares about because of that grief you're talking about from losing her best friend. So that very well could be the case there. So yeah. Okay. So we've talked about the two out of the three prongs that I wanted to mention. The last tied in my pitchfork, so to speak, is that the tone of this movie just felt like it was all over the place, BJ. Like, I really like this part of the story that deals with the relationships and the human dynamics between Mickey and his friend and these women, but then it kind of drops those threads and focuses more on a lot more, really, on the characters played by Toni Collette and Mark Ruffalo, who are like these political figures who are overseeing this spaceship and kind of leading this mission. And that's an opportunity for Bong Joon-ho to satirize Trump and fascist rule and eugenics and colonization. And I just kind of thought those things were painted with such a broad brush in this movie that they didn't feel especially effective to me. Like, it kind of got the job done storytelling wise. And I appreciate that he's one of the few directors right now who's willing to say things that need to be said about the fucked up state of the world that we're in. But it didn't really connect with me beyond a surface level, especially like the catharsis that happens when Ruffalo's character is blown up at the end of the movie. So I don't know. I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about that because you wrote an article that people will be able to read when they listen to this at Slash Film about how this movie, Bong Joon-ho had final cut for this movie. And this is like a great example of what can happen when you give directors final cut. So I know this part of the movie worked better for you than I did, but what did you think about like the tonal back and forth, the kind of whiplash that the movie provides?
The tonal back and forth, like, again, it really works for me. It's because I'm so on board with the humor of this movie, the tonal shifts don't feel as jarring. It kind of feels like everything for me in this movie is simmering like on the verge of satire at any moment. So like those swings don't feel as large for me, but I am very, very interested in the way that Bong Joon-ho depicts the wealthy elite in his English movies, because we do see this a little bit in Snowpiercer. Like, I think about like the scene of Alison Pill playing the piano and the camera is spinning and there's like a lot of color and like, it's so like cartoonish because he depicts these sorts of leaders as the cartoonish stupid villains that they are, because they are. Like, it's, you know, Ruffalo's character is like Trump and Elon Musk kind of rolled into one entity. And he's very much like, why do any of you take this guy seriously? Like, look at him. He's a clown. Mm. Like, that's, it's clown behavior. And so the fact that they are leaning into clown behavior, like every time Toni Collette was like, I need these sauces, I'm just like, this is gold. Like, I love yeah. this all day. But I like the fact that this movie kind of interrupts what feels like, oh, this is going to be a very human story. It's about these characters and their relationships. And now you have to deal with the government, because that is how so many of us have to live our lives every single day. I do not have the luxury or the privilege to like just tune out and not worry about it today. Like, I did not want to spend all of yesterday having to be pissed off at Gavin Newsom because he said trans people shouldn't be in sports. Like, that's not mm-hmm. a thing I should have to worry about. I should have been able to go about my day, go see a movie, do like hang out with my wife, and I couldn't. I have to deal with fascism. And like, that is very much how this movie feels, where it's like, we should be focusing on Mickey and his relationships and like the weird situation he's in. But nope, we also have to deal with fascism, because like, it is a constant uninterrupting presence in all of our lives. And it's so annoying because it's clownery, because they are mm-hmm. so foolish and so stupid. And yet we have to take it seriously. We can't just let them be clowns. And like, so it really resonated with me. Like, I will fully admit, I like got choked up watching this movie, because I didn't realize how badly I needed a filmmaker, especially one who's not from America, to essentially use their art to say, you're not crazy. You're in a fucked up situation. It's really bad. And yes, it is so stupid. Like, I just needed that really, really badly. And so this movie yeah. gave that to me tenfold. And like, that's like, it just, it, this movie made me feel seen in a way, and like, less feel seen. I feel very heard by this movie. And I think that's why it's resonating with me.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I guess, like, because Bong Joon-ho is clearly saying, look at these figures, they're cartoonish, the level of character to the performances, specifically by Toni Collette and Mark Ruffalo, didn't really bother you then? Because I kind of thought, like,
no.
Okay, I get what you're doing here, but, like, this is way over the top. And I know
but
that, like, sometimes he does that.
I don't think it is. I don't think it's that over the top. Like, I really, really don't. Like, yesterday, the internet was united because everyone was sharing these, like, Photoshop nightmare photos of J.D. Vance, like, making him be, like, the kid from Shrek who's like, do the roar, and, like, just looking like a petulant child because he is. Or the fact that, like, in the State of the Union, our president was like, we've spent $8 billion on making mice transgender, and it's like, no, we did not. Like, you just control F'd and look for trans and got a word that's not transgender, you absolute clown ass. And like, I have to take this seriously and I can't ignore it. It's like, what is happening to us? Or like,
yeah,
he's going to come out to YMCA and Macho Man. This is clown behavior. We like, our government is wrestling. What the fuck?
No, trust me. I fully agree with all that.
Like, I feel like I wasn't going really talking crazy. So like, watching Mark Ruffalo and Toni Collette act like this, I'm like, you're the realest people in this room.
I guess it wasn't so much about like the things that their characters did. It was about the actual performance choices that they made. Like, Ruffalo kind of literally doing a Trump for some of it, but then not. And like, I guess the performance style I was talking about as being mm-hmm. more kind of over the top than like, you know, the narrative function that those characters serve. So,
yeah,
anyway,
I think
that was...
I think it works because like, he does have like his little Trump-isms that kind of sneak through, but like, he is very much an amalgamation of a lot of people. I just think that we're all hardwired to kind of like get dog-eared when the Trump stuff happens, because that's what we see the most. But there's like a couple like vocal tick things he does that I was like, oh God, that's Elon Trump. Like, that's Elon Musk. Oh God. Mm. And like, every once mm-hmm. in a while he would do something where I'm like, that's clearly like this other international leader, like that's a Boris Johnsonism. That's like they're just all kind of crammed together so that, but I think as Americans, we're just gonna like the Trump stuff is just gonna stick out really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for listening to my three-pronged attack or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. And like, you're absolutely entitled to have those feelings. I'm not here to try to convince you to feel otherwise at all. Like, This movie is not going to be for everyone.
I led with negativity here, but I liked the stuff about Mickey being expendable and kind of what the movie has to say about like exploitation of the working class. And I really enjoyed Robert Pattinson's performances, like Robert Pattinson innocent, as the kids would say, I guess.
I thought the movie looked
really good too. Like, it's very expensive and it seems like every dollar was on the screen. So just in terms of like positives and other things that we haven't touched on that stood out to you, I wanted to give you some room to talk more positively about the movie and say things that you liked about it. So what else stood out to you?
So this is kind of like a superficial thing, but it is very, very important to me. I'm very obsessed with how many normal looking people are in this movie and on this ship. I have been very frustrated recently with the way that so many movies are like, everybody is just getting really homogenized in their appearances. Everybody is like some form of like moderately hot. And that's not to say anyone in this movie is like ugly or anything like that, but there's a lot of just normal ass people in this movie because that's how society is. There are people like Naomi Ackie who are like ungodly beautiful. And then there are also people like the scientists who are just normal looking people. And I love, like, I loved that so much. And it did kind of jolt me a little bit to be like, oh, I don't remember the last time I watched a movie where there were this many characters with speaking lines that look like regular people. And that was very refreshing, because if you're going to tell a story about humanity, you have to represent the totality of humanity. And this movie has everyone. Like, there's a lot of people in this movie from different backgrounds, different body sizes, different skin tones. Like, it was pretty, like, kind of overwhelming at times to be like, oh God, like, yeah, this is actually what humanity looks like. I forgot, because movies haven't shown us that in a while.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. Anything else you wanted to shout out?
I think these performances are absolutely fantastic. I also, I will die for the creepers. I love them so much. I think that they are so cute. And I love the way that they roll like into roly-poly bugs and just kind of like roll around. I'm obsessed with them. I think they're so cool. Great character design. It very much feels like, you know, Bong Joon-ho monster creatures. Love them. Love the creepers.
Excellent. Okay, so let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and get into your interviews.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
O'Reilly. Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
All right, so first up, BJ, I think we should play your interview with Toni Collette and Naomi Ackie. They were paired together, and you had pretty short interviews this time around. Mm-hmm. Warner Brothers running a tight ship, didn't really have a ton of time to work with on this junket, but it was cool that you got to talk to them. So anything you want to say in order to set this up?
Just that they were incredibly charming. Like, the second I, like, logged in to say hello, they were, like, immediately very lovely people. And they clearly loved working on this movie and had so much fun with their characters. And, you know, that's also going to endear me to, you know, performance, is when I know how deeply they do care about those characters. Even Toni Collette, whose character is, you know, terrible.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, here is BJ's chat with Toni Collette and Naomi Ackie.
Hello. Thank you so much for being able to chat with me today. I am, not to be dramatic, absolutely obsessed with you both. So this is such a dream come true to have you both in one spot. What a dream. So I only have a little bit of time here, but Mickey 17 is obviously a story about Mickey Barnes, but it is also set in a society that caters to the whims of a cult-like, fascist, egomaniacal blowhard. And you both play women who take very different pathways and how to exist under that sort of administration. So what lessons are you hoping audiences learn from your characters that they may be able to incorporate in their own lives if they were to hypothetically ever perhaps exist under the administration of a cult-like, fascist, egomaniacal blowhard themselves?
Wow. Good question. See, my character is really interesting. Yeah. I'm married. But by the end of it, I think she learns that everyone kind of goes through the same experiences as a human.
Yeah.
And that you can't avoid the hard stuff. Mm-hmm. But actually, she's so narcissistic, I don't think she actually would change the way she
lives. Brilliant.
But ultimately, I think it's the takeaway is like that everyone matters, and we can be aware enough to know that we have personal power, because it's not naturally nurtured in society. It's not, you know, people aren't told to really take care of that stuff, you know, but it's in each of us.
Mm. Yeah, I think from Nasha, it's like if you fight for one person, you're fighting for a lot of people. Like, I think there's something about, like, someone in need, help him, because that might ricochet off into something else. I don't think Nasha was intentional. Like, you know, like, there's, the end result isn't where she started. She wasn't seeking to, you know, don't want to give anything away. But her adamant love of a person who is undervalued did change something. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. And while I have time for one last question, what to you in your life makes for the perfect sauce?
Okay. I've got to think carefully about this because there are a few. I mean, we did mention it earlier, but Nando's Peri Peri mayonnaise.
Mm. Okay.
Rags amino acid with tahini.
Yes.
And olive oil.
Which I do need to try.
It's yummy.
Can you put it on fish, do you think?
I think you could put it on anything.
Yeah, and it works. That was weird.
Fantastic.
Lemon makes everything better.
Yeah, lemon makes
everything better.
Very, very true. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me. That's my time with you today. And congratulations on a phenomenal movie.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, let's go now to your chat with Steven Yeun. Anything you wanted to say in terms of setup for this one?
Only setup is just I want everyone to know that, like, he was so cool and he had these really cool, like, inside, like, blue blocker glasses on. And I was like, damn, Steven Yeun, you're so cool. Like, that's like, it sounds so cheesy, but like, he really does just like kind of command a room. And so if you're out there like wondering, like, is Steven Yeun a cool guy? Yeah, he's a cool guy.
Awesome. Okay, here is BJ's interview with Steven Yeun.
So I don't have a lot of time, so this is a bit of a two-parter, but countless actors get their start in the genre space, but they often leave it behind once they've reached mainstream success. But that has not been the case for you. Even after The Walking Dead made you a household name, you've continued to pop up in all of these genre projects, whether it's something like a studio project like with Jordan Peele, or even a smaller release like the criminally underseen Mayhem. So what is it that keeps you coming back to these high concept projects? And in your opinion, what is it about director Bong's vision in the genre space that's so special that you've returned to him specifically once again?
You know, I don't know if I have a rhyme or reason. I don't even necessarily delineate genre or not genre in that way. I'm just looking for interesting stories, and I'm looking for things that I feel reflect something that's I want to study or go through. And then in terms of the people that I want to work with, I just look for you know, people who are convicted and feel confident about what they're trying to say or explore. And I think the reason why I really love working with director Bong is he's all those things. And when I say confidence about what he wants to explore, it doesn't necessarily mean, I actually don't mean at all, that there's like an absolute answer that they're holding in their hand that they're trying to get to. It's more like, they're agreeing to kind of like chisel away at this piece of marble until it reveals itself. And I think that is a mark of a really wonderful artist. And I think that's really the special nature of director Bong, is he has all the tools. He has all the mastery of the craft. He has all the understanding. And while he's doing that, he still lets the film kind of reveal itself to him over time.
Beautiful. And is there anything that you've learned from your time working with him that you've taken with you and carried into other projects?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he doesn't try to teach, I think. Mm-hmm. And in that way, he's the best teacher. What I love about Bong is like, he'll let you figure it out for yourself. He'll never own your understanding. You know what I mean? And, one big thing that I learned from director Bong is, you know, he shoots in a very specific way where he has scenes boarded, and he knows what he wants the movie to be. He's kind of had it edited in his mind, and so he sets up frames. And when you're in the movie, you're shooting these frames that he's locked off and set up, and you would think that it'd be too rigid because he kind of wants you to live in this one section of the frame. You're kind of like, oh, he wants me to like just stand here. And that's absolutely not true. If anything, what he's done, he's kind of like a really benevolent observer. He's just kind of set up the parameters for you to be alive in that one section of the screen. And in that way, you find like a deeper sense of freedom.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me, and congratulations on yet again another phenomenal movie.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
All right. And then now your interview with director Bong and Sharon Choi. That's her name, right? The longtime interpreter that he's had.
Yeah, he's had her as his interpreter for a very long time. And it's a bummer that people can't see this. I did post it on my personal Instagram and TikTok, but the way she works is so fascinating because you know, you ask director Bong a question in English, he can understand you. He'll reply in Korean, and then you can just watch her work. And then the second he's done talking, she responds and she has everything. And he just nods his head like, yeah, you got me. And I'm like, this is she's like, she's a genius. I don't know how her brain can do this, but like incredible, incredible work.
Awesome. Okay. So here is BJ's chat with director Bong.
My first question is that fantasy writer Terry Pratchett once wrote that evil begins when you start to treat people like objects. Do you agree? And is this a core pillar of Mickey 17?
그 방금 인용해 주신 그 쿼트가 제가 진작에 더 알았으면 좋았을 텐데 그 시나리오를 쓸 때 정말 이 영화의 저변에 깔려 있는 주제의식이나 의미들을 되게 정확하게 표현해 주고 있는 거고요. 휴먼 프린팅이라는 게 이 영화의 컨셉트인데 사이파이 하나의 컨셉트로서 휴먼 프린팅이라는 것 자체에 이미 자기가 방금 얘기해준 그 코트의 그 느낌이 이미 담겨 있죠.
You know, that's such a perfect quote for this film. I wish I had known it sooner when I was writing it, because it's really connected to the underlying themes and questions that this film explores. You know, the concept of human printing, it's a key element of the film, and that quote is exactly what human printing is.
휴먼, 그러니까 인간이 프린팅돼서는 안 되잖아요. 결코 이렇게 조합돼서는 안 되는 단어들인 건데, 이미 거기서 슬프고 또는 우스꽝스럽고 그런 비인간적인 상황들이 이미 그 결합이 되어 있는 거고, 그게 또 로버트 패틴슨이니까 더 불쌍해 보인다고 해야 될까? 약간 미키 특유의 어떤 불쌍한 느낌과 맨날 착하긴 착한데 맨날 손해볼 것 같은 저 인상과 맞물리면서, 예.
Because humans aren't supposed to be printed out. That's a combination of words that shouldn't really exist. And that setup itself presents the tragedy and ridiculousness and sort of the inhumanity of that world. And you know, if you think about Robert Pattinson in that situation, you feel even sorrier for the character. You know, if you look at Mickey, you know, he's like too nice for his own good, always taking the shorter end of the stick. And you know, it really emphasizes the unfortunate predicament of Mickey's situ what Mickey's story.
Yeah, I mean, people I think often feel expendable even without the concept of human printing. And so this is really emphasizing what it can feel like to be in a hostile society. Do you see this story as reflecting the current landscape many of us are living through?
한국에서도 최근 이제 젊은 노동자가 되게 위험한 일을 하다가 죽은 사고도 있었고, 전 세계에서 그런 게 많을 거라고 생각해요. 근데 이제 더 슬픈 것은, 뭐, 존이란 애가 일하다가 어떤 익스트림한 조합을 하다가 죽으면 그 자리에 뭐, 프레드릭이 들어오고, 프레드릭이 죽은 다음에 또 거기에 톰이 오게 되고, 말 그대로 그 조합은 그대로 이어지는데 사람이 계속 바뀌면서 가는 거거든요. 그것이, 거기서 오는 어떤 두려움과 슬픔 같은 게 있죠. 근데 영화에서 이제 미키가 그걸 하는 거죠. 미키 3, 4, 5, 6가 한 명한테 다 쏠려서 하는 건데. 그런 현실의 상황이 그대로 영화에 저는 반영됐다고 생각하고, 더 극단적인 방식으로, 더 익스트림하게. 한 명이 그걸 다 하니까. 그렇기 때문에 이제 휴먼 프린팅이 중요한 거죠. 죽고 또 리프린트 되고, 죽고 리프린트 되고. 따라서 사람들이 죄책감을 안 느끼는 거죠. 너는 계속 죽어도 돼. 왜냐하면 휴먼 프린팅 하면 되니까 뭐 이런 거죠.
You know, in Korea recently, there was a young a worker who unfortunately died at the workplace, and that happens all over the world. And what's even sadder is that, you know, when, you know, say John dies during an extreme job, you have Freddie come in to replace him, and then if Freddie dies, you have Tom come in to replace him. So the job remains the same. It's just the people, the person constantly changes and replaces the predecessor, and that's quite terrifying and also sad. And in the film, you see Mickey just take all of that on. He's one person who takes all these missions and constantly dies. And I think that setup really reflects our current reality. Just shows it in a more extreme way, because it's one person handling all of it, and he dies and gets printed out, and that actually alleviates the guilt of his community, because they can just be like, oh, you know, it's your job to die. We'll just print you right back out.
Oh, definitely. I have time for one last question. What lessons are you hoping that American audiences might be able to learn from watching characters living under a ruler like Marshall?
되게 명확한 의도를 가지신 질문인 것 같은데, 이 영화 속에 마크로팔로 캐릭터가 뭐 특정 인물을 풍자하는 거냐라고 물어보면은 아니다라고 저나 마크가 대답하기는 쉽진 않겠죠. 근데 어쨌든 모르겠어요. 그러니까 한국에서도 지금 되게 정치적으로 최근에 복잡한 좋지 않은 상황이 있었고, 뭐, 현대에 들어서도 모든 인류들이 겪은 되게 안 좋은 정치적 경험, 나쁜 리더의 모습, 이런 것들이 이 마샬 캐릭터에 다 녹아 들어가길 바랬고요.
I think you, I sense the clear intentions of your question. You know, with Marshall's character played by Mark Ruffalo, if you ask us, is it a satire of a particular character? I think it will be difficult for Mark and I to say no, absolutely, to that. But, you know, even in Korea, there was recently some political turmoil and not so good things happened. In the modern age, all of us have gone through bad leaders and political sufferings, and I kind of wanted all of that to be mixed into this character.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. That's my time with you today. Very much appreciate you. Congratulations on a wonderful movie.
Thank you.
Okay, BJ, before we wrap up, I wanted to ask you where you would put Mickey 17 in our group rankings list that we established yesterday. So just to remind everybody, we had Barking Dogs Never Bite at number 7, Mother at number 6, Snowpiercer at number 5, Okja at 4, Memories of Murder at 3, The Host at 2, and Parasite at number 1. So what do you think?
So my personal is that this is 2, because this is my favorite English language movie he's ever made. But I know that you're not with me on that, and that is okay. I'm not going to fight you on it. So it probably would end up at like 4.
Yeah, if we're splitting the difference, because I think this would probably be, like 6 for me or something. So, all right. Well, maybe when Director Bong makes another movie, we can come back and maybe we'll throw somebody else into the mix and like rejuggle this experiment and run it back one more time and add Mickey 17 to the mix and try to come up with something hardcore. So before we wrap up, anything else that you wanted to say about this movie, shout out any other aspects of it, anything we didn't get a chance to talk about yet?
The only thing that I'm going to say is, I mean, we say it all the time. If you are interested in this movie at all, please see it in the theaters, because this is a movie that is unlike anything else that is being made right now. And if we want to have more, you know, unique and original kind of movies that are being put out by studios, we have to support them. And waiting until streaming is... They don't care about those numbers. They care about box office numbers. So, you know, make the time, go check it out. At minimum, it's a weird ass time at the movies.
Yes, well said. Okay. Well, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. We have a lot of articles up about Mickey 17 at Slash Film. I'm not going to link to all of them, but just go to the homepage and you'll see a bunch of them there. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all next week.
When you get the Planet Fitness Black Card, you can bring a friend anytime you work out. And now through March 13th, get your first month free when you join. You heard that right. Conquer the stair climber with your partner in climb. Enjoy a post-workout recovery session in the hydro massage. And do it all again with access to any of our 2,700 convenient locations. So, you coming? Get your first month free and all the perks with the PF Black Card for just $1 down, $24.99 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends March 13th. See club for details.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.